from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Mina Kim. Coming up, the House Thursday overwhelmingly passed a major water bill full of implications for California, potentially making it easier to build dams and store water. But critics, including Senator Barbara Boxer, say it'll weaken environmental protections. We'll talk water politics in the first half of the hour. Then, passage of California's Proposition 66 supposedly puts the death penalty on a fast track, but just how fast and what obstacles remain to holding the first execution since 2006? We'll get started with Forum right after this. Welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Mina Kim. And we begin this hour with an issue that always divides California: water. Yesterday, the House overwhelmingly passed a major overhaul of water policy. It could mean larger water allotments for farmers, but some critics, including Senator Barbara Boxer, say it'll also weaken environmental protections. In fact, Boxer is threatening to filibuster the bill when the Senate takes it up today or tomorrow. Now, President Obama apparently doesn't like parts of the California provisions, but he's not threatening to veto it, at least not yet. And here now to discuss the water bill that's dividing California's congressional delegation is Michael Doyle. He covers water and other issues for McClatchy News Service in Washington. Michael Doyle, good morning and welcome.
Good to be with you.
And also Jay Lund, director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. He's also an adjunct fellow at the PPIC Water Policy Center. Jay Lund, good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Michael Doyle, first to you. Give us the big picture on this. What are the most important and the most controversial parts of this water bill?
The bill authorizes $558 million worth of projects. Many of them are uncontroversial: desalination, recycling, reuse. Part of the money would go to dams that might include the Sites Reservoir in the Sacramento Valley and Temperance Flat on the San Joaquin River. Far more controversial, though, are the efforts that would, in essence, steer water through the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta to large farms in the San Joaquin Valley at Westlands Water District and others. That's the crux of the case against this bill, that it would potentially harm the Delta and unduly benefit the farmers.
How is Barbara Boxer and others, how are they saying it would weaken the Delta further?
By the allegation by the or the charge by the bill's opponents is that the bill weakens Endangered Species Act protections and what are called biological opinions, which are legal scientific opinions designed to protect vulnerable species in the such as salmon or delta smelt. And so the belief by the environmentalists and others who are opposed to the bill is that the language will dictate too much water going out of the Delta that will benefit farmers that have been stricken by the drought, but that will harm the fish that depend on the water as well.
And help us understand this, because what you're describing there is sort of a California section that was inserted into a larger bill, which I think was called the Water Infrastructure Improvements for the Nation. And I believe Senator Boxer was supportive of that. And then Senator Feinstein and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy from Bakersfield, they negotiated this other sort of a rider, correct?
Well, that's basically right. Senator Feinstein and House Majority Leader McCarthy, who represents Southern San Joaquin Valley District, have been negotiating off and on for several years at this point. And the House Republicans, led by McCarthy, have made every effort to keep the pressure on. They have repeatedly passed different versions of the California Water Bill. And Senator Feinstein has worked, what she would say, is diligently going through multiple dozens of drafts of the legislation. They were always looking to find what they call in Congress a vehicle for the bill. They found it in the Water Infrastructure Bill, added it on, and the manner in which they did that is one of the reason Senator Boxer is so upset about that. Senator Boxer is a ranking member on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. She helped write the infrastructure bill, and now she fears it's been hijacked for purposes that she opposes.
Well, and it's really created a split. In fact, Senator Feinstein didn't show up earlier this week when Boxer gave her sort of farewell speech in the Senate, presumably because of this split, right?
Well, Senator Feinstein's office says simply that she was busy, but it's impossible not to read something into the fact that after serving together for a quarter of a century, Senator Feinstein does not show up for Senator Boxer's farewell. This has really been a remarkable conclusion to their long time of working together. They've had their differences on other issues, and they've certainly had their differences on water. But until now, they've seemed to keep those under wraps behind closed doors. Senator Boxer was clearly very angry when she took to a news conference to denounce the bill and threatened to filibuster it.
That's Michael Doyle, correspondent with the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers. Jay Lund from UC Berkeley, UC Davis, let me bring you into this. California has a lot of water issues, of course, and they're exacerbated by the drought, but they preexisted the drought as well. To what extent does this larger bill and the rider that was inserted by Senator Feinstein and McCarthy, Representative McCarthy, address these big underlying issues?
Well, I think it illustrates sort of the enduring good and bad things that come from federal-state involvement in these issues. The bill certainly has some monies that will be useful for different projects that are, I think, most people would consider to be positive, mostly positive in the state. It has some useful provisions, I think, for some of the flood control issues and other parts of the bill than this particular rider. But it hints at, you know, a possible greater federal micromanagement of the environmental regulations that apply to very important central parts of California's water system and ecosystem.
And given that we're about to have a new administration of Donald Trump, what is the significance of that, given that environmental policy is going to change quite likely in a fairly, you know, extreme direction come January?
Well, I've heard some environmental folks suggest that this might just be the opening shot of an assault on the Endangered Species Act. So you never know what's going to happen with the new administration, certainly. I think what will be more interesting to watch will be how the state administration, the state government responds to this, because the state government has quite a lot of legal power in these issues as well,
well,
if it decides to exercise it.
And in fact, we were talking about the Delta a moment ago. Jerry Brown, of course, has long talked about Delta tunnels to sort of bring water around the Delta to kind of protect that ecosystem a little bit, shore it up. To what extent, what are we hearing from the Brown administration, and how might this bill, assuming the president signs it, affect his plans?
Well, it hasn't passed the Senate yet, so I think there might still be some interesting changes that come to it. I haven't heard anything in particular.
Well, let me just stop you, though, because the House is adjourned, so they really can't change it, right? They either have to pass it or there's going to be a filibuster and it doesn't get passed at all, right?
That's right, in which case it will be taken up in the next session.
I see. Okay. And Michael Doyle, we know the split between Senator Boxer and Feinstein has been on the front pages, but what about the rest of the California congressional delegation? Has the split occurred along party lines or regional lines? How would you describe it?
Well, the change in the split shows the cleverness of the tactic used by Senator Feinstein and McCarthy. There seems to be among Northern and Southern California Democrats, or there has historically been, pretty unified opposition to the California water provisions. However, by putting it into the larger water infrastructure bill, that presented those lawmakers with a choice. They could vote against California provisions they didn't like, but in so doing, they would kill flood control and other measures that they do like. And the end result was that roughly half of California House Democrats voted for the overall bill, notably members from Sacramento, Ami Berra and Doris Matsui, a number of members from Southern California who liked the larger bill's money for the Los Angeles River restoration and other work. So while opposition continues rhetorically among a number of California Democrats, in the end, a number voted for the bill because they liked what it was attached to.
We're talking about a major water bill that passed the House overwhelmingly yesterday. It now goes to the Senate. Our guests for this half-hour segment, Michael Doyle, correspondent in the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers, and Jay Lund, director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. If you'd like to join us, give us a ring at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, of course. It's forum at kqed.org, or leave a comment on our Facebook page as well. Jay Lund, we are, of course, in the middle of a drought still, particularly in Southern California. How does this bill potentially figure into all that?
Well, this is an attempt to capture a little bit more water from the Delta and make it available for use in the southern part of the Central Valley and in Southern California.
And you say, when you say capture, you mean water storage?
Well, to pump it out of the Delta as it flows by. There's some difficulties in the Delta right now with the environmental regulations that prohibit the pumps from going on at times when they would excessively reverse the flow in a couple of the southern Delta rivers that cause impacts to fish. That's really the central thing that seems to be the target of weakening in this legislation.
We've got some comments here from listeners. Let me read a couple of them. Barbara writes, this is not just a Delta versus farmer issue. Why aren't the millions of Bay Area residents being told that Feinstein's rider will have devastating effects on the health of San Francisco Bay? It needs more fresh water, not less. Jay Lund, thoughts about that, the San Francisco Bay and the impact of this bill?
Well, I think there might be some impacts on San Francisco Bay, but I would probably think that they're not going to be devastating in the sense that we're probably talking about a few hundred thousand acre feet of water out of a few million acre feet of water that flow that way. I think there will be some environmental impacts. They could be substantial, but they'll mostly not be in the Bay. They'll be more in the Delta and up in the tributaries.
I'm going to give out the phone number one more time. If you want to join us for this half-hour segment, it's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum at kqed.org. And here's a tweet from Erica. She writes, closed-door deals are not the way to solve the California water problem. It's a way to subvert the Endangered Species Act and harm fish. On the other hand, Michael Doyle, in the waning days of this Congress and the waning days of the Obama administration, we've seen, I don't know if progress, some would not call it progress, but we've seen action on this major bill. We saw the Cures Act overwhelmingly passed with bipartisan support earlier this week. Is this the way politics works, or is there something sort of nefarious about the way this was done?
As somebody who spent his career standing outside closed doors waiting for someone to come out and lie to me, I can tell you this is exactly how politics works. And in fact, I would harken back to 1992 when environmentalists led by then Congressman George Miller and Senator Bill Bradley wrote what is called the Central Valley Project Improvement Act, a very environmentally minded bill. And in essence, it was done along similar lines as this one, but behind closed doors, yes, but with a lot of reaching out to interest groups. And in this case, while the details were kept under wraps, there was considerable outreach. And if you talk to Senator Feinstein, she will tout how many meetings she had with stakeholders, environmental groups, irrigation districts, and others. So I think if you talk to anybody involved with the business of governance or politics, closed-door deals, so-called, while they get a bad rap, are the way things happen.
All right, let's go to the phones now. And John, you're first. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. It's John McManus with the Golden Gate Salmon Association. I just want to call and say that people may remember we were shut down from ocean salmon fishing for the first time in history in 2008 and 2009 after record water diversions from the Delta. What we see with this bill is basically clearing the way to take more water from Northern California that's likely to put us back, salmon fishermen, put us back in a position we were in 08 and 09 where we may be shut down once again because they just aren't going to leave enough water in the rivers and in the Delta for salmon. That's my comment.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask you, because that phrase, this sometimes gets boiled down to the phrase farms versus fish. In other words, fishermen versus farmers. What's missing from that equation, if anything?
Well, salmon provide livelihoods to about 23,000 people in California. About that, Central Valley salmon I'm talking about half that many again in Oregon. So there's tens of thousands of salmon-related jobs that are hanging in the balance right now as a result of these actions by Senator Feinstein. So we're certainly hoping that this bill is killed in the Senate, or we're looking at severe losses to the salmon fishing communities, which are not only up and down the California coast, but also along the inland rivers where salmon are fished. I mean, the sport fishery is generating tremendous economic activity in addition to the commercial fishery. So we've got many humans who are going to be harmed by this, who rely on salmon to make a living.
All right. John McManus, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. We've got a listener comment here. What exactly are Feinstein and Boxer disagreeing on with this bill? That's a good question. Michael Doyle, can you maybe refine that a little bit?
Sure. They're disagreeing on both policy and on process. On process, I would not overemphasize this, but it must be said that Senator Boxer is very unhappy with the way in which Senator Feinstein and Congressman McCarthy attached the California provision to a bill that Senator Boxer had helped negotiate. She felt ambushed. In terms of policy, I would summarize it as saying that there is, in Senator Boxer's view, a disrespecting of the Endangered Species Act and the scientific opinions as expressed in the biological opinions, and an overriding of a scientific consensus and a disregard for environmental vulnerabilities, all in the service of big farms. I think that is the essence of Senator Boxer's concern.
And Jay Lund, what's your critique on that concern?
I mean, do you agree? Well, I think that's a pretty valid concern. This is almost an unprecedented level of federal micromanagement of the details of operations of a water project that has a substantial amount of state interest and conflicting state interest. So I'm a little bit worried that this might set some national precedent for congressional micromanagement and what probably ought to be more of a technical activity.
All right. We've got some questions from listeners via email. Stephen asks, I heard that the bill makes it easier for the federal executive branch to approve dams in California. Could you please explain that provision? Michael Doyle?
Yes. The answer is it does make it easier for the executive branch, and this will mean the Trump administration, to go ahead with dam construction, not just in California, but, and here the language is, to me at least, a bit ambiguous, apparently in other western states as well. That's the concern that Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State and others have. There's a certain streamlining of authorization of projects. As I say, the wording is a little oblique, but to my reading of it, it would be easier and perhaps quicker for certain water projects, at least, to be authorized. Some opponents, by the way, including Congressman Jared Huffman from the North Coast, maintained that the bill's language could also be interpreted to offer backdoor support for Governor Jerry Brown's Twin Tunnels project. The bill's supporters disagree with that assessment, but it's just one of the examples of what's still ambiguous about the full consequences of this bill.
And Jay Lund, it's been a long time since California built a dam. I'm wondering to what extent, given the drought and growth and population needs for water and so on, to what extent is there any consensus on the need for more water storage? And perhaps is there even a site for a dam that both sides, meaning the environmentalists and water, ag and so on, have agreed on? Is there any consensus around that?
Well, first of all, I think California has been building dams, not nearly at the rate that it did decades ago, but we built some dams in the Bay Area, Los Vaqueros, and down in Southern California, Diamond Valley, in the last couple of decades. There's still, I think, quite a lot of interest in building dams, and you see that reflected in the bill. I think those are all very expensive projects. There's a lot of controversy over how much water and environmental benefits you can get out of having additional storage. It varies a lot depending upon where you are in the state, how effective additional storage can be. So I think there's a lot of details to be worked out on that. And they're going to be very expensive solutions.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. And Ronald in Sacramento, welcome.
Hi, this is Ron Stork at Friends of the River.
Oh, hi, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to chat about what Jay was just talking about, the storage provisions in the bill. The bill essentially authorizes the Secretary of the Interior to authorize whatever projects she or he wishes to authorize. Of course, they don't get constructed without funding, but also the funding, at least the initial federal funding, comes from revenues that would ordinarily be revenues to the federal treasury instead of being fully reimbursable projects. So it's an odd bill, and it certainly breaks with traditional ways in which water projects are authorized. Congress does that, and funded reimbursable costs are reimbursed to the federal government. So it's kind of a giveaway of the federal treasury and loosening of the authorization process.
All right. We're getting short on time, but Jay Lund, you want to comment on that?
Well, I think there's a lot of concern about the for construction of any large infrastructure. They always have environmental impacts. There's some discussion about how do you make different elements of infrastructure environmentally beneficial. Essentially, we have an old system that was designed almost exclusively for flood control and water supply, and now we're trying to re-engineer it, rebuild it in a very, very modified landscape so that we keep more of the native species around. It's a very tough job, and it will take us decades.
All right, Ron, thanks. And by the way, there is news out this morning that President-elect Trump is going to pick Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, a Republican from Washington State, to lead the Interior Department. She's a five-term Republican from Eastern Washington, highest-ranking woman in the GOP leadership. I don't know, Michael Doyle, if you can shed any light on her and what that choice could mean for any of this or anything else regarding the Interior Department.
Policy-wise, the Congresswoman seems to be a pretty conventional Western conservative, and without knowing her record in detail, I would say that she would certainly be sympathetic toward water storage provisions. She voted for this bill. She has just seen her in action at the House Natural Resources Committee. A very pleasant, civil woman who gives a fair hearing to people who will testify before her. So she does not seem to be an ideologue from what I've seen. But in terms of policy, I think she would be very sympathetic to the views of the Central Valley farmers in California.
And just quickly, Michael Doyle, what are the chances of some sort of litigation, assuming this bill passes the Senate and is signed?
100%. This bill is 91 pages long. There's ambiguous language, as I say, and there's a lot at stake. And whenever there's a lot at stake, litigation will result. We only have to look at what amounts to its predecessor bill, the 1992 Central Valley Project Movement Act, which prompted years and years of litigation, which may still be going on.
All right, we will leave it there. We'll keep an eye on the Senate today, see what happens there. Michael Doyle, correspondent for the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers, thanks to you, and also to Jay Lund, director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis, also with PPIC's Water Policy Center. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Coming up in the next half of this hour, we'll be talking about Prop 66. It passed, and it promises to speed up the death penalty in California. We'll find out just how that might work or might not. Stay with us.